Kevin Cole with you here on the afternoon show. It's KEXP, and I am here with one of KEXP favorite artists of all time, Bob Mould.
Hey, Kevin.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Welcome to KEXP's new home, playing tonight at the Showbox.
And, yes.
Here right now. Also, I should mention for folks listening, you can watch this. We're doing live video streaming. Just head on over to kexp.org. Want to take it away?
All right. We ready? Let's do it. It's your birthday, but we never celebrate. Graduations or a graduation degree. Talk. losing time. Lose my mind, Cheryl. Losing time.
Live on the afternoon show, Bob and a fantastic band, Jason Narducci on bass and vocals, and John Worster on drums. It's great to have you guys here. Thank you so much for being here.
Good to be back.
And just heard two songs.
Back because I was here a couple weeks ago for the grand opening.
You were. You played grand opening. That was fantastic.
That was great.
Thank you for doing that, and thanks to all of you for your longtime support of KEXP and helping build the new home.
Oh, my gosh. You're too kind.
So at grand opening, I mentioned loving the new album in passing. We're just up there on stage for a second. How scorching it is, yet how hooky it is. And you commented something to the effect of hiding all the darkness behind the sunshine.
Oh, a little bit. It's, the new album, Patch the Sky, is... some people have been describing these last three records as a trilogy now that the third album has appeared. And, to me, I wrote these records in very different circumstances. So, I think for the casual listener, they hear the tone and the feel of the records, and maybe they think, oh, there's three that are sort of the same. But, this record, a lot of darker stories to tell, sort of down stories for the most part. But
that's saying a lot.
Oh, yeah, it is.
You've had some dark stories.
Yeah. But I think the good news on it is the melodies are very, very uplifting on this one. And it's weird. It's such a catchy record, but, I'm not sure you want to circulate those stories constantly in your head, so.
Yeah, that's been a technique that artists have used for years, right? You think of songs like the Beatles' Help just being a literal cry for help, yet, we just all sing it and...
Yeah.
Are very happy.
Definitely.
Doing so.
It's always the contrast is good. And sometimes the contrast is turned up a little higher, and I think that's the case with this record.
You mentioned kind of being a little nervous about it too.
Yep.
What did you mean by that?
Well, with it being such a down record, traditionally when I've written records that are very down in lyrics, I think for the real devoted fans, they love it. But I think for the casual fan or, people that are just coming to the work for the first time, they're like, what's this guy all on about with all this no sunshine kind of thing? So, this one being a little bit darker, I was like, I spent 6 months by myself writing the record.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when any artist isolates a little bit and you put yourself in a sort of real personal space, you're never quite sure how it's going to play out in the field.
Was that different for you in terms of how you wrote these songs, or was it just kind of the emotional content that was maybe different or darker?
Emotional content was different, as dark, if not darker, than most stuff. But, I think the difference is, with Silver Age, a lot of that record was written in a very compact period. Most of it was written December, January of 2011, 2012. Beauty and Ruin, the second of these three records that we made together, was a lot of that was written on the run, I guess. We were touring so hard through 12 and 13. I'd get home and barely have time to get my thoughts together and write some music and hopefully have some words that worked. And this record, again, 6 months of nothing but writing music and words. It's very, very different, very, very different circumstances. So I think the as I was saying before, I think the results are very different.
Yeah. I was going to ask, kind of bring up the trilogy idea, at least in part because I'm biased. I'm a fan of all your work, but I've seen critics and some folks called the last three records kind of a career resurgence. I think CBS or or news or in some major media outlet did that, did a really good interview with you. And was just wondering if you felt that way.
Well, I mean, I just I go about my work year in, year out. And I think there are always prevailing trends in music. Sometimes loud guitars are in, sometimes they're out. Sometimes I tour a lot harder and do a lot more of the work that people think that, you know, people, you know, being visible, and that will have a lot to do with it. You know, I think this time, you know, putting out the autobiography in 2011 and sort of, you know, opening up a little bit to people about my personal life and about my family and, you know, historical things that I didn't really talk about much until then, it sort of lifted a weight off of me.
Yeah.
And
there was certainly a lot of visibility too, right around that period of time. I know there was that show that
the Disney Hall tribute show.
Yeah, and maybe the Sugar reissues.
Yeah, Sugar reissues work with the Foo Fighters. So I think, you know, I think there was a little bit brighter light on me at the time, and so I guess that's where the beginning. You know, that would maybe help. Be a contributing factor to this resurgence that people are talking about, but, you know, trust me, I do my work every day, so it's, you know, I don't get to choose when it's popular and when it's not.
Yeah, and certainly congratulations, too. It's been received really well, and, you know, for what it's worth nowadays, like a number one album.
Yeah, number one vinyl album in the U.S. for 1 week. That's like a real milestone for me, being a vinyl fan, you know, growing up on, you know, Jukebox 7 inches when I was a kid, and, you know, my two albums a year I could buy at the drugstore. And so, I mean, that meant a lot. I mean, in this day and age, I think the fact that people are coming back to vinyl and that people supported the record so strongly right out of the gate, you know, it was definitely a milestone for me.
What was that first album you bought at the drugstore?
That would have been Revolver, probably.
Wow.
Back in 66.
Good one. On these last three records, you've had this incredible band, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've been, you know, Jason and I have been, we've been friends and worked together for 25-plus years now.
Yeah, Jason played in Sugar also, or toured with Sugar. You didn't?
No.
Not maybe played Sugar songs.
Yeah, when we did the Copper Blue stuff, we were all playing together, But you know, I've known Jason, you know, and his work since, you know, Jason and Allison and Verbo and all the projects he's been in, now Split Single, you know, the projects that Jason's been involved in Chicago, in Evanston. And, so we've worked together a lot. And then John came on board in 08. In the middle of a tour, we had a drummer that had some other obligations, you know, some other concerts and things that he had to attend to, and Jason had suggested that we give John a call on very short notice. You were coming off what, an AC Newman tour or what?
Mountain Goats
tour. John does Mountain Goats, Superchunk, AC Newman, many Sharpling and Worcester, many things, and luckily John was pretty familiar with most of the songs that were in the set at the time. So we
just got right
did a sound check together in San Diego, and he's been here ever since.
Well, it sounds fantastic. Absolutely great.
It's really a pleasure to play with these guys. I've been telling people this is the best band that I've ever been in. And, you know, some people find that very blasphemous because they have an attachment to the 80s. But trust me, it's the best band I've ever played.
That's awesome. And playing tonight at Showbox at the Market, tomorrow night at the Wonder Ballroom in Portland, doing a little West Coast thing here. Mm-hmm. So I need to ask, our Minnesota roots run deep. And, you know, we both spent a lot of time in the Twin Cities. You started Husker Du there in 79 while going to McAllister. That's about the time I started working at First Avenue, which was Uncle Sam's, and spent 14 years there. We kind of grew up there.
Yes, we did.
It's certainly like family from that era. And First Ave, just a remarkable place during that time that a lot of bands like, you know, Husker Du, The Replacements, and Prince got there. And man, you guys played First Avenue the day after Prince passed away.
Yeah. We started the tour on April 20th. It was a Wednesday in Madison. Played a show there and then had an off day to drive up to Minneapolis and relax before the weekend shows. And we were about an hour outside of Minneapolis on I-94. And John was the first one to pick up cell service.
Yeah.
Because it's a little spotty in northwest Wisconsin. But John said, Prince died. So like, what? You know, and then we got within range and we put on, you know, one of the local radio stations, and they were confirming this. You know, they had some people, you know, on site confirming what had happened. It was pretty pretty shocking. And, you know, we're driving into town, we're staying a block and a half from the club, and, you know, in my mind I'm already, you know, sort of imagining what kind of, you know, sadness yeah. and chaos and celebrations await us. And
yeah, how to respond to something like that. That's such a shocker.
Well, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing was unbelievable. And, you know, immediately, you know, my phone was on fire, you know, with media people and stuff. So I just, you know, got to my room and sort of spent a minute and, you know, just wrote some words, you know, just a reminiscence of what Minneapolis was like. And, you know, my fleeting, you know, encounters with Prince, which were very few and far between, and, you know, just tried to frame what his music meant to everybody in the Twin Cities. And, you know, and then Friday and Saturday, of course, the two shows at First Ave. And for people who didn't know, that was where Purple Rain was filmed, and that's where you DJ'd all the time, and that's where I got drunk all the time, and yeah, that's where all of us lived, like you said. And it, you know, to go back to that room, it was... it was great. You know, a lot of people were asking, are you nervous? Are you this? Are you that? I'm like, well, no, I mean, this is my home. You know, I grew up on this stage. Of course, it's a very somber occasion, but music is what heals us. Right. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I was out of the country, had a similar experience. My phone was just blowing up and couldn't believe it. And just wanted one to be back here at KEXP and be on the air in a moment like that. And then two, right after that, just wanted to go to Minneapolis ASAP and just be at First Ave for some reason, you know, just being in a community with, you know, fellow music lovers and, you know, fans of Prince would have been a very profound experience. And the impact that he had on the Twin Cities was, you know, just incredibly profound. What was it like just being in Minneapolis those days, those 2 days, and just being on the street and being in front of the club? I mean, there were thousands of people congregating.
Well, yeah, Thursday when the news broke, I don't know if it was the club or the city or both, you know, blocked off the entire block out front between Hennepin and First Avenue North on 7th Street. And there's tens of thousands of people out all night, you know, celebrating and music playing and people singing. You know, there was a house band and people were getting up and singing, you know, Prince songs. And everything was purple. You know, Friday when I woke up, everything was purple.
Yeah.
Went to Glam Doll Donuts. All the donuts were purple. You know, it's...
The Walgreens was purple.
The Walgreens was purple. Everything was, you know, so it was amazing, you know, and nonstop news, you know, TV and radio. And, you know, it's always a lot to consider when a local legend or an international legend such as Prince passes. And, you know, and then, you know, sort of negotiating the club that day and the sound check and the hordes of, you know, foreign reporters. Who are you? Who are you? And, you know, just trying to keep my head down and do my work.
Yeah. And you guys did do a Prince cover that night.
We did. Yeah, it was funny. We did When You Were Mine. And I'm not the best at remembering all the words to songs. Fortunately, our tour manager knew the words, and it was funny because the Suicide Commandos, who you played right before we came on, supported us on those shows. They and also a young band called Fury Things. And it turns out, you know, we were sort of trying to hush the whole thing. We didn't rehearse it. We were going to sneak it in the middle of one of my songs, which is the same tempo and key. And then we got a note, Commandos are working on that. We're like, oh no. So, but All's Well That Ends Well, both bands got together on stage and played it together. So that was, worked out really well.
Yeah, it must have been.
I think it took people a while to recognize it because, you know, it didn't have that, you know, that lilt.
Yeah, that total
the original
bounce.
Version.
Probably had some heavy guitars.
It's a little more pummeling, yeah.
Well, a sweet moment. Bob Mould and band live on the afternoon show here, KEXP, playing tonight at Showbox. Thanks for sharing those memories of that moment.
Of course. The
new album, absolutely fantastic, Patch the Sky, and want to play a couple more songs?
Yeah, we're going to play one more off the record, and then we'll play an old one, and then maybe we'll do something a little extra at the end.
But great.
This one's off the album. It's called You Say You.
You say it isn't so. Everything.
Afternoon show, KEXP, the song The Descent from Silver Age. Right before that, You Say You from Patch the Sky, playing tonight at Showbox at the Market tomorrow night in Portland at the Wonder Ballroom. Can you tune and talk at the same time?
That's fun stuff. I'm tuning. Check in with Jason.
Jason, so I noticed this week there's a string of West Coast tours or shows. Portland tomorrow night, then down in L.A., back up to San Francisco. And then what?
And then we go home.
We go home for a little while.
Yeah.
We go home and then get a little break, and then I'm sure there'll be more stuff.
Yeah, so summer's going to be quiet, and then hopefully some more stuff in the fall and winter, and hopefully some stuff in the spring as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the response has been great. The shows have been wonderful. The crowds have been amazing. It's a lot of, not only, First Ave and Showbox and Wonder, but... got Metro in Chicago, Paradise in Boston, 930 Club in D.C., Webster in New York. I mean, these are places that all of us have seen so many shows and grown up playing these stages. So it's, it's been really a great trip. And, thanks to everybody that's come out to see the shows. And, as long as the duct tape holds, we'll keep touring.
That is awesome. Thank you so much.
And I guess we're going to close it out with, if that solo wasn't enough for all y'all, we'll play one with a guitar solo in it. It's Black Confetti.
Bye.
Confetti. Bob Mould live on the afternoon show. That song on Patch the Sky. Bob Mould playing tonight at Showbox at the Market, the Wonder Ballroom tomorrow night on the West Coast. And man, thank you so much again. And congrats on the new album.
Thank you, Kevin. And congratulations on the new live room and the new facility and the same great music as always.
Thank you. Thank you. Keep the albums coming. If you need any black duct tape, we'll lend you as much as you need.
Black duct tape is wonderful.
huge thanks to Jim, Justin, Alia, Scott, Matthew, Kevin, Matt O, Nancy, Milton, everybody helping out behind the scenes, all the donors that make this possible, and John, Jason, Bob, thank you so much. Bob Mould, live on the afternoon show. It's KEXP Seattle.